Meta Science Mondays.
Yes, science!
With Dan Riskin.
Science, yeah!
All right, bro.
This is it.
I'm thankful for science.
This is science.
I'm Jerry Agar, and joining me for Meta Science Monday is Dan Riskin, CTV's news, science, and technology specialist. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. I'm looking forward to this conversation. People's BS detectors are badly calibrated.
Yes, I like this too. It's fun. So this is a specific flavor of BS, if you will, and it's the flavor of that stuff that you get on an Instagram post that looks like a really profound sentence. And sometimes it is a profound sentence, and sometimes it doesn't mean anything at all. And can you tell if it has any meaning? So for example, an example of a statement you might have on an Instagram post that is meaningful, I think, and is meaningful according to this study, is a river cuts through a rock not because of its power, but its persistence. I think that's a good that's a good metaphor for erosion. It explains it, and you can kind of meditate on it and think about it. And it can be, you know, something that gives you thought. But then there are ones that mean absolutely nothing at all, like hidden meaning transforms unparalleled abstract beauty.
That sounds like a fortune cookie.
It does sound like a fortune cookie, and you look at it, and you could sit there for a while and try to just tease the words apart, but it was made up by someone, and it on purpose has absolutely no meaning at all. And so what they did is they showed 10 of these non-BS and 10 of these BS statements to people, and they had them say whether they thought that was BS or not. And then they asked people how good they thought they were at detecting this kind of hogwash. And the thing that came out of the study that was most interesting is that people tend to be uncalibrated. The people in the bottom quartile, the people who are the 25% worst part of the human distribution in terms of how well they can detect this stuff, they believe that they're better than average. And the people that are the best at this, the people that actually are in the top 25%, they actually believe that they're worse than average at detecting because they get a sense of how hard it can be. And so it's
they also know how much
thing.
Of it there is.
Well, there's that too. But it's an interesting piece of it that the people who think that they're the best at finding BS are often the ones that fall for it the most easily. And I think, you know, I come across so much scientific stuff that's often outside the stuff that I studied for my PhD, the stuff that I really know. And I'm always sort of humbled by this fear that I'm going to just completely be out to lunch. And so it's what keeps me it makes me work very hard, always remembering that I just might be wrong.
Okay. While I specialize in trying to recalibrate the BS detector in the political world, that's where I am.
God help you. God help you.
that's right. The only thing I have going for me is I can disconnect from all of this when I leave here.
Well, there's something for the disconnecting for sure. But it's, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of it floating around, if you'll pardon that horrible way of imagining it. And it's a time where we have to be, people are sort of left to their own devices. We get so much information from so many different places. And especially if you're a parent and you're trying to teach your kid how to navigate in this social media world, it's just really hard to help people figure out what's real and what isn't. And there just isn't a official voice that you can just turn to that's going to give you the right answer every time.
All right, let's move to this one. Self-driving cars lack the social intelligence required to move smoothly among human drivers and pedestrians.
This is a research that just came out of Europe where they basically went through, YouTube can be a really good source of data. And they went through YouTube looking for videos where a self-driving car makes a dumb mistake. And there are lots of these. People love to ride in the backseat of their self-driving car and film it and show, oh, my car made a dumb mistake. And, you know, for the most part, they're harmless mistakes. Nobody gets run over in 99.99% of these. And when someone does get run over, of course, it's a big news and it's a big deal. But here's an example. There's a video that's one of the 70 videos that go into this research study where a car is looking to make a right turn in a residential neighborhood. The person's riding in the back seat. There's nobody driving. And the car comes to the corner and there's a family standing on the corner with their two little kids. And their little kids are in those, you know, those push pedal sort of riding things. And they're tiny kids and it's going to take them forever to cross the street. So the parents wave at the car and say, go, just go, go, go. But the self-driving car can't read that language. It doesn't understand the social cue. And so it just sits there waiting. And eventually it gets very stressful for the parents. So they're like, okay, fine, we will cross. And then they start rushing their kids to cross the sidewalk. And then the car inches forward a little bit, it and scares everybody to death. And so, you know, the car just doesn't have this figured out. And there are all these social intelligence things, like when you both get to an intersection at the same time and you look at the other driver and somebody waves, or you read the body language of the other car, that self-driving cars just haven't figured out yet. And people that live in cities where there are a lot of self-driving cars, especially the Bay Area, are starting to get frustrated by this, because you can feel it slowing traffic down when the cars just can't figure out a four-way intersection because they're letting everybody go ahead of them because they can't quite figure out the social cues. And so this is a place where obviously more work is needed in terms of what the car's behavior is and how it responds to these social cues.
Well, I could see that as being a difficult piece of programming, because recognizing that the person is hand-waving would be simple enough. But is the person hand-waving to say, you go ahead, or just an aggressive hand talker?
Right, exactly. And the stakes are so high with this stuff. It's, of course, always better for you to err on the side of caution, right? For the car to say, okay, well, if I'm not sure, I'm just going to stop and wait till this situation changes. But that can create these backlogs and can frustrate people and can create a real hesitance to allow self-driving cars into the city because they feel like it's slowing everything down.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you'll go home today with a gold star for knowing how to pronounce the word err.
Ah, thanks.
All right. Okay, that's no moon. And you have on your headline there, okay, true, Obi-Wan, but Earth does have a new quasi-moon.
Yeah, I always thought that's no moon was Admiral Ackbar, but I watched the clip again, and it's Obi-Wan Kenobi who says it, so I was wrong on that one. This is a new rock in the sky, an asteroid, if you will, that's called 2023 FW13. But what's cool about it is it's acting like a moon, but it's not really a moon. It's going around us. It's actually going in the opposite direction of our normal moon. It's tiny. It's 20 meters, and it's very far away from us, 25 times farther away from us than our own moon. But it's not really in gravitational lock with the Earth. To be a moon, it would have to be attracted by our gravity and be orbiting us because it's held here by gravity. What's actually happening with this crazy quasi-moon is it's orbiting the sun, but it happens to be in the same orbit as our planet, and so it's next to us. And so over the course of a year, it looks like it goes around us one time, but really, I mean, it is really going around us, but it's not doing that because it's a moon of us. It's just doing that because it's next to us on the racetrack, and we happen to be going around in the same orbit. And so they think that this thing got showed up around 100 BC, probably got into that orbit around then, and it'll probably be around for another 1500 years. It's too small to see even with a normal telescope. You have to have a big fancy, you know, island telescope like they have in the States. But this is a pretty impressive little phenomenon, a quasi moon that looks like it's orbiting us but isn't really. I just think what a geeky, nerdy thing to have in our solar system. I just like knowing about it.
All right, now one of the fixtures of science fiction movies, as we were just discussing here, is suspended animation. There are some great movies that involve this, and you go into suspended animation and travel for 50 years to some place off in the future, and then you're fine. Are we actually working toward that?
Yeah, Planet of the Apes, Alien. There are a whole bunch of movies that all of them end terribly. So I don't know why we're working towards going towards that technology. But scientists were doing some stuff with mice, and they tripped across a finding that kind of leads in that direction. So they found this part of the brain where basically the body temperature and sleep and all these other things are sort of regulated. And they found that if they zapped it with sound waves, with ultrasonic waves, all of a sudden the mouse would fall asleep. It would drop its body temperature down 3.5 degrees Celsius. It would slow its heart rate to half and basically go into this state of hibernation, not deep hibernation, but a light hibernation. And then after a while, they would wake up. But if they zapped them again as they were waking up, they would stay in that state. And so they managed to keep them in that state for 24 hours and then let them go. And they warmed up and woke up in about an hour and a half, and they were totally back to normal. But it's this way that if you put this special hat on them that zaps them with sound waves and it hits the right part of the brain, it knocks them out like this and puts them into this hibernation state. So they tried it with the mice. Then they were able to do the same thing with rats. With rats, they only went down 1 degree Celsius, not 3.5 degrees Celsius. But they're thinking that this leans into a direction where you could have some kind of a device that helps humans. And yeah, okay, there's the space travel example, but that's way off in the future. What about somebody who's had a stroke, or somebody's had another kind of an injury where you need to put them into a medically induced coma or something like that? And this might be the technology for that.
All right, Dan Riskin, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.